They'd all heard the machinery slipping into action, watching the yellow light disappear from the T above the sliding door. But Mildred was the first to voice what they were all thinking.
Someone's coming.
JB turned away, staring intently down the corridor to their right. Ryan caught the movement.
Our friends or more muties?
I'm guessing muties.
How many?
More than one, but sounds like they're coming real slow, not at a charge.
Mildred still watched the elevator door.
They're being cautious.
I don't think so. When I chilled those three, well, I didn't sort of register at the time, but the reactions were real slow.
We'd best get ready.
What if the elevator brings Christy or Doc or Dean or Michael? They could run into an ambush.
Mildred had her ear pressed to the door.
Just stopped.
The light was now on behind the B indicator.
Tommy gets up here again, we could have us a sizable firefight. Could be best to go meet them halfway, Ryan.
Yeah, but one of us should stay here.
You. Me and Mildred can go.
All right. Be careful and stay triple red.
Ryan stood with his back to the elevator door, listening to the powerful machinery that was hauling it up to the top, wondering which of the missing four it might contain. He was torn between hoping for Christy and for his son. Ryan half-turned, keeping watch on the dark mouths of the numerous passages running away in all directions.
Hello, lover.
Christy planted a small kiss on Ryan's cheek, just as though she'd known all along that he'd be standing there when the door slid back.
Good to see you.
You too. And you, son, and Michael. You haven't seen Doc, have you? He's the only one missing now. No?
For a moment, it looked like Dean was going to hug him, but the boy checked himself. Instead, he tugged at his father's sleeve.
Dad?
What?
Christy said fuck down at the bottom.
Ryan smiled.
No shit. Well, then I guess I'll have to wash your mouth out with...
Then, everything went to hell. At that moment, Doc had arrived at the bottom of the elevator shaft and was peering with a scholarly interest at the control panel.
What a world of choice we have here. Colors, letters, and numbers. If I had my calculator with me, I could work out the odds against reaching the correct code, which odds I believe must be positively astronomical. But since I do not have it, then I needs must return to the infernal gateway and... But soft?
He placed a melodramatic finger to his lips.
What sequence is writ on yonder wall?
A touch of rheumatism in his fingers made Doc a little clumsy at punching in the key buttons. Twice he made mistakes, and the display panel admonished him. The second time it warned that a third error would result in availability termination and security force contact being made. Tongue protruding between his lips with the effort of concentration, Doc carefully followed the handwritten instructions and became the fifth person in the past 90 minutes to use the 10-symbol code. He leaned on the sword stick, feeling peculiarly nonchalant. Waiting for the elevator took him back to the time that he and his lost wife Emily had stayed at the luxurious hotel on 6th Avenue. The name escaped him. That had been one of the first times that either of them had ever come across such an ultra-modern invention, and they had ridden up and down in it for half an hour, giggling like children, to the considerable irritation of the hotel's other guests. The bell told him that the elevator had arrived, and he waited for the door to open, rapping on the metal with a silver lion's head on the top of the cane.
Come on, my good fellow.
He noticed the open doors button and pressed it. The large cage was empty, and he stepped into it, looking back to make sure that no other elegantly attired ladies or gentlemen were about to join him. But no one was there.
To Del Marco's excellent dinery at the top of the tower, where my wife and I propose to imbibe a bottle of your best Haute-Brion and dine on the finest mutton with some of your famous wow-wow sauce.
He used the ferrule of the stick to press the button that closed the door and set the elevator off on its long climb to the upper level of the redoubt.
Going up. First floor, soft goods and everything in draperies and bed linen. Second floor, the department for the layette and the trousseau, babies and brides. Third floor, hunting, shooting, and fishing. Fourth floor, toys for all ages.
Doc grinned to himself, showing his amazingly perfect teeth, glittering in the dulled steel walls of the cage.
Going up for gentlemen's outfitting in the tonsorial department. Ladies' lingerie going down.
A delicate blush crept across Doc's wrinkled cheeks, but he shuffled his feet like a little boy caught peeking through the outhouse door.
Sorry, Emily, my dove. I suffered a slip of the tongue, dearest. I promised that such bawdry will not pass my lips again.
The ride seemed to have been going on forever, and Doc rocked back and forth on his heels, checking that it was still ascending.
Why, here we are at our destination, Emily. I confess to being a trifle peckish.
He pushed the button to open the door, part of his mind expecting to find himself looking at an ornate lobby with red velvet curtains and crystal chandeliers, a throng of elegant boulevardiers parading before them, with a bewigged flunky in a frogged brocade coat and knee breeches bowing unctuously to greet Emily and him to the restaurant. Doc was busy pasting on a patronizing smile, ready to slip a silver dollar to the man to make sure they got a really good table near the orchestra and a long way off from the door to the kitchens.
Good to be here, thank you.
For a mind-freezing moment, Doc thought he was facing a saffron-robed Buddhist monk. But what would a monk be doing in Delmarco's eatery in Upper Crust, New York? The man stared at Doc as though he were equally amazed at his appearance. The figure was barely 5 feet tall, with a pale complexion and a puckered scar that ran from the corner of his mouth down into his neck, vanishing beneath the yellow-orange sheet wrapped around his scrawny body. His head was totally bald, and his sunken eyes were grossly bloodshot. Though Doc was 6 feet away from the bizarre apparition, he recoiled at the appalling stench that was exuded through its sagging mouth, like an open sewer. Why in the name of the Almighty would a Buddhist monk be carrying 3 severed and bloodless human hands strung around his waist? And why would he be slowly drawing a rusted saber from his belt? Doc's brain was in frantic overdrive, trying to rationalize what he was seeing and what was happening. It wasn't a Buddhist monk in Delmarco's. It was a murderous mutiny in a redoubt. Doc staggered away until he was trapped at the back of the elevator, just dodging the ponderous swing of the sword. The ghoul struggled to stop the weapon from carrying him off his bare feet. Doc had his own sword stick in his right hand, which made it difficult for him to get at the lama in its holster. But it only took a moment to twist the lion's head on the cane and cast aside the ebony case, freeing the blade.
How about you? Damn your insolence, you verminous cur!
But the mutie didn't even seem aware that its potential prey was miraculously armed. It had regained control over its own brass-hilted saber and was readying it for another haymaker slash at Doc's head. Doc, at 6'3", was vastly taller than his opponent, with a vastly superior reach, which he immediately used to its full advantage. He dropped one knee slightly, his left hand lifted to shoulder height, like a lithographic illustration from a 19th century manual on the proper use of the foil. His right arm was held straight, so that the slender rapier became an extension of his body, and he lunged beneath the clumsy attack of the slobbering mutie.
Touché, mon brave!
The needle tip of the slim sword drove into the creature's neck, splitting the Adam's apple. Doc's timing was so perfect that the point slid off the cervical vertebrae and emerged 3 inches out of the back of the ghoul's neck. A twist of the wrist at precisely the correct moment ripped the sides of the throat apart, sending a cascade of choking blood into the creature's lungs. The saber fell, and the mutie started to lift its hands to the penetrating rapier. But Doc had already withdrawn it, standing and watching, knowing that the wound was fatal.
Tapped your claret, you evil-looking piece of near-human ordure! So you said before. However, my brain will not be providing you with a midnight snack, I'm afraid.
Blood was pooling on the metal floor of the elevator as the mutie slithered face down and died. Doc stooped and wiped his scarlet-smeared blade on the saffron robe, then straightened, picking up the ebony shell that surrounded and hid the Toledo steel. He stepped confidently out of the elevator, finding himself in an open area with a number of corridors opening off. In dying, the mutie had lost control of bowels and bladder. But Doc was aware of a different, sicklier smell.
Like an operating room. Or...
Doc's train of thought was interrupted as he emerged in the upper level of the redoubt, to find himself surrounded by dozens of the muties, Many had portions of partly devoured human bodies in their hands or strung about them, and all held knives, axes, or spears.
Brains!
Doc knew that this was the end. There was no Ryan or John Barrymore Dix to come to his rescue with blasters blazing. He threw the ebony stick behind him and fumbled with his left hand, ignoring the ring of brutish slurping that was beginning, surprisingly slowly, to close in around him. Golama seemed stuck, but he eventually freed it, cocking the hammer over the single central 63 caliber shotgun round, aware that there would be no time to shift it to utilize the 9.36 calibers the gun also fired. One roaring explosion would take out several of the pressing muties, and then his dancing blade would hold the rest off for a few more seconds. Then it would overwhelm him.
Ah, I pray for a swift passing, Lord.
He stepped carefully over the body, back into the elevator. If only there had been a moment's warning, he could have pressed the button to close the doors and been safe. Now, it was too late. They filled the doorway, grunting and jostling one another, waving their knives at him.
What's the manner of a gentleman's passing?
Ryan had never met any muties quite like those that infested the redoubt. He'd come across forms of cannibalism before. Hell, everyone in the Deathlands knew someone who knew about it. Christy had once told him stories about something called the Donner Party, way back in the old 1800s. Somewhere up in the high Sierras, trapped in winter. Nothing at all to eat, except each other. There were tales of stickies that ate human flesh, roasting it over open barbecues. Occasional whispers of a group of inbred cannies, way up in the Shens, or hidden deep in the festering depths of the Bayou country. But nothing, nothing on this kind of scale. The threatening gang of 30 or 40 muties that were confronting JB and Mildred all seemed to have bits of drained corpses about them. Christy, Dean, and Michael had barely walked out of the elevator to greet Ryan when they heard a shout from the armorer.
Got us a lot of company, Ryan.
The other odd thing about this particular tribe of grossly mutated creatures is their slowness. Ryan had seen stickies, crazies, dirties, and swampies, most of them with a feral hatred of norms that was made manifest by vicious and often cunning attacks. Prater's rule of thumb on dealing with muties had been implacably ruthless, and based on a lifetime of frontier experiences with the breed.
Chill them. Chill them today and tomorrow. Chill them fast, and chill them good.
But there was something about these brutish, ponderous entities that was thoroughly disgusting and malevolent, and yet somehow too stupid to be a heart-stopping menace. The six friends stood together in a narrow line of resistance, facing the mob. All had their blasters drawn. At first, Ryan couldn't catch what was being shouted at them. He glanced down at his son.
You got sharper ears than me, Dean.
Sounds like they're saying brains, I think.
That doesn't sound good.
Why don't we chill them all, Dad?
Don't see a blaster among them.
Ryan had checked them out with a single raking glance. Far more men than women. Usual ragged clothes, mainly barefoot. Cleavers, axes, homemade spears and knives with crude wooden hilts, bound with strips of sinew. And the extraordinary amount of human flesh. Most had laid down their burdens, and Ryan could see flayed skulls and hunks of ribs with splintered ends of bone protruding from white flesh. One of the muties had shaped up to throw the spear he held in his right hand, but his coordination was horrible, and he finished by chucking a pair of feet, joined by a cord inserted through the ankle bones. Apart from the animal-like bellowing and the waving of their blades, the line of muties was notably reluctant to advance toward the blasters. It was the sort of situation that Ryan particularly hated. A standoff. It would be easy enough to butcher the gang where it stood, but Ryan wasn't sure how many rounds it would take to put them all down. All he really wanted to do was to try to track down Doc Tanner, whether he was ahead or behind them, and get them all out of the redoubt to explore the locality. But he had no way of knowing just how many of the cannies there might be infesting the complex.
We could go back to the elevator and try one of the other passages.
Looks like the best option.
What about Doc?
I don't know. What time did you all come through?
Dean and I together at 9, more or less on the hour. Michael came through 20 minutes later.
Then that's the interval. I was here at 8. JB 20 minutes after that, then Mildred the same period after him. So Doug has to be either a little way ahead of us, or maybe following on.
The Lamar!
He's behind us! Christy, come with me. The rest of you stay here.
Even as Doc fired the pistol, feeling it buck against his wrist, His mind wasn't totally on his imminent demise at the hands of the muties. Part of him was distracted and amused by the similarity between the hideous face of the leading attacker and the ghastly appearance of Lon Chaney in the flickering old vid of the Phantom of the Opera. The same staring bloodshot eyes and stretched rictus of a nightmare leer. The face disappeared into a spray of flesh, bone, and splattered brains as the .63 caliber shotgun round struck it through the middle of its porcine nose. It bought Doc a few moments more of life. There was just barely enough time to stick the Lama back into its holster and ready himself, the rapier on guard.
We who are about to die salute you.
He flourished the sword into a hissing circle of polished steel.
I will rejoin you, Emily, my dear.
Ryan, sprinting toward the elevator, heard Doc's defiant voice. He rounded the corner and saw the murderous mob, all with their backs turned, oblivious to his arrival. His first impression was of the scarlet mist that dappled the heads and shoulders of the muties, as well as spraying the ceiling and walls of the elevator. His boots slipped a little on the cold stone as Ryan skidded to a halt 10 yards from the mob, standing with his feet spread, his 9mm Sig Sauer pointing like the flaming sword of the Angel of Vengeance. Christy stopped at his side, steadying her own 5.38. Doc was awash with sweat, his hand and right sleeve sodden with spilled blood. It had been a lifetime since he'd been coached by Adelmo Cecilio at the Boston Athletic Club in the fine points of MMA, foil and saber. He'd been so much younger then. His arm was exhausted. The muties hardly even tried to parry his repeated lunges, and three more were down on the floor, being trampled on by their fellows. Despite all Doc's endeavors, they still pressed forward against him, knives flailing as they tried to peck at him. Their efforts were so clumsy that he noticed several had cuts on hands and arms from the weapons of others. But none of that counted. When he heard the snap of gunfire, Doc could hardly believe it. Not until the press of bodies seemed to weaken, their heads turning to stare behind them.
Not headshots, Christy. Might ricochet and hit Doc. If he's still alive in there.
Hang on, Doc!
By the three Kennedys! Is that the 7th Cavalry coming over the hill in the last reel?
Those at the head of the crowd were aware of the attack from the rear and were trying to push out of the death trap of the steel elevator, while those caught helplessly at the back were seeking cover from the remorseless hail of lead by elbowing their way toward the front. It was bloody chaos. Ryan leveled his blaster, picking his targets with great care. At such close range, it was impossible to miss. It was important to try to make every round a killing shot, going for the center of the spine, level with the heart and lungs, or if the muties turned, to drill them neatly through the middle of the chest. Christy was equally careful. Her Smith & Wesson 640 held only 5 rounds, so she used 4, taking out 4 cannons. Obeying the great Deathlands rule that Ryan had drummed into her, about not using your last bullet unless you had to. Doc leaned against the scuffled wall of the cage, watching the miraculous dissolution of his enemies. Bodies tumbled and literally gallons of blood poured across the floor, lapping at the toes of his boots. The muties cracked and finally turned to run, moving with exaggerated clumsiness, their arms flapping like penguins, heads wobbling on weak-muscled necks. They dropped their weapons as they lumbered from the killing ground, scattering, disappearing down the other passages.
Reload.
Ryan watched them flee. He waved a hand at the figure of Doc Tanner, towering above the mound of twitching corpses that blocked off the entrance to the elevator.
You all right, old man?
Never better, my dear fellow.
Need some help?
Nah, chilled most of them. The rest are gone.
Doc wiped his rapier, picking up the polished ebony sheath that converted it into a walking stick. He climbed carefully over the bodies, unable to avoid stepping on the chest of one of the 2 mutie women killed.
Do I assume that we are all united again, Ryan? Then that is the finest news a man could have. My thanks to you and the exquisite Mistress Roth for your well-timed rescue. Though, if I may be forgiven for nitpicking, I would appreciate it next time if you could arrange to save my life a little more quickly. It was a damnably close-run thing, friends.
Ryan grinned and clasped Doc by the hand. Life, which had seemed unbearably bleak and desolate only a couple of hours ago, was now filled with the warmth and affection of good companions. They all stood together, ringing the map of the redoubt that Ryan had noticed earlier. Mildred pointed at the various sections, delineated in different colors, shaking her head.
The whole of this floor and the one above it toward the main entrance seemed to have been one great big mortuary. If all of them were filled with bodies a century ago, then...
What is the difference, pray, Dr. Wyeth, between a morgue and a mortuary?
The one good thing about this redoubt was that it looked like you weren't in it. But if you really want to be educated, Dr. Tanner, then I can enlighten you, though I admit the distinction is a touch subtle.
I can scarcely wait to hear your exhibiting subtlety, madam.
A morgue has the connotation of a place where the bodies of the unidentified dead or the victims of some accident are first taken, while a mortuary is more generally the building where bodies wait before being taken to the cemetery for burial or for cremation.
What's the difference between a cemetery and a graveyard, Mildred?
One question's enough for today, young man. I'll have to think about that and tell you some other time.
Are we going to hang around in here? The smell makes me feel like throwing up. It would be good to breathe some fresh air.
I will second that. It seems a most pleasant idea to be able to use this as a walking aid for my frail old legs, rather than to spill the unclean blood of the ungodly.
Show it to me, Doc.
We've got to move on, son.
Just a quick look. I never saw it properly before, and Doc chilled him so well.
Doc, save him from making himself a pain in the ass, would you?
Surely.
A twist of the lion's head hilt released the blade of Toledo steel. The rapier flashed in the stark overhead lamps of the redoubt. Dean touched it delicately with the tip of a finger.
Thin, ain't it, Doc?
But very resilient, springy and powerful, my boy. Its strength lies in its very lightness.
The boy lowered his head closer.
What's that lettering? Can't read it.
It is an old language from Europe called Spanish. In the original, it says, No me saques sin razón, no me envaines sin honor.
He traced the floridly engraved words along the narrow blade.
What's it mean, Doc?
Do not draw me without a good reason, and do not sheathe me without honor.
Shit or get off the seat.
Not exactly, my dear boy. Not exactly.
J.B. had an eidetic memory for maps. Once he'd looked at one, it would be printed permanently in his mental files.
Guess we might as well take a look at one of the central storage sections. Then we can easily get out of the main entrance.
What about the cannies?
From what we've seen, I don't think they'll be a threat. I never saw such poor, slow-moving bastards in all my life.
As long as we don't get ourselves bottled up in a dead end, we should be fine. Don't know how many of the tribe there are, but we've already dented their numbers some.
Christy touched Ryan on the arm.
I still can't properly believe that we all made it. Not after all going off on jumps to other places. Thought I'd lost you forever, lover.
Me too. And if we get some free time later, I'll tell you about something interesting that I saw on my jump. But right now we need to move.
Then let's go take a look at this morgue, shall we?